Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to your monthly dose of extra content from Worst Foot Forward. It is the third foot, and we have for you... We're full of the joys of spring into summer, aren't we? It's summertime has come at Worst Foot Forward Towers. It's the month of May, just about still. And Ben and I both have celebrated our birthdays in the past couple of weeks.
We have indeed, my darling bud.
Yeah, and so to mark that, and we thought we would have a little bit of a look at the month of May itself, the month that has given you such greats as Queen Victoria, Mark Zuckerberg, Ben Vandeveld, and Barry McStay. And I've done a little bit of reading.
Oh, good. Queen Vic is a Taurus.
Or a Gemini. Let me check exactly. So I didn't. I'm a Gemini. You're a Taurus, are you?
Yes, I am, because I'm slap bang in the middle of May. I would love to know what the horoscope for Queen Victoria was on the day she was born.
I see some changes coming in your life. Well, she was only fourth in line to the throne, I think, when she, when she was born.
Carefully bumped off her elder siblings until eventually...
She worked her way up.
Yeah. The ruthless Victoria made her way there to the top.
She was born on the 24th of May, so she's a Gemini like myself.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. In fact, maybe she's my twin. Maybe she's the yin to my yang.
That is a fairly lengthy karmic balance.
Yeah. One queen to another.
Well, yes. Oh, I will absolutely be referring to you as the Empress of Dublin from now on.
Yes, please. Absolutely my drag name. do you know why May is called May?
Oh, gosh. I mean, surely it's after a deity of some kind, but I can't immediately correspond it to anything Greek or Roman or Norse.
Yeah, it's the Greek goddess Maia, who the Romans also adopted as well. And she's a goddess of plenty, as you would imagine. She's one of the Pleiades, and she's the mother of Hermes as well. And she's the daughter of Atlas.
Yes, I've literally just read Stephen Fry's Mythos, in which he slowly but surely introduces you to the Titans and the gods and their genealogy, and... my experience of it very much reminded me of my wife's description of reading Brian Cox's book about quantum physics, where the first couple of chapters in, she was like, yep, I'm following you. And then chapters 3 and 4, she had to read a couple of times. And by the time she got to chapter 5, she was like, nope, I have no idea what you're on about. And just the astonishing variety of gods, big and small, and their interbreeding had me baffled about halfway through. So Maya got lost in that orgy of Greek gods.
an apt term, no doubt. Yeah, Ovid had other ideas. The Roman poet Ovid thought it was related to the word maiores, meaning elders. That was sort of relating to those who had come before us. And the word May wasn't really used very much until about the 15th century. They still used the Roman word maius, M-A-I-U-S, until then. And in Old English, they sort of referred to months by things that would happen instead of by, you know, particular deity names. So May used to be referred to as the month of three milkings, because the cows were so fresh and ready to go that you could milk them up to three times a day, apparently.
I'm glad that you swiftly went into the factual reason for that before I did a grubby joke.
Rapidly took control of the steering wheel again.
Yeah. I think we've spoken before about the French Republican calendar and how they renamed the days and the months. Do you know what the French Republican name for... in fact, it wasn't even May, for reasons best known to the revolutionary frogs. You have April the 20th to May the 19th is a month, and then May the 20th to June the 18th is another month.
No, go on, remind me.
So you have Floréal and Prairial, which means Floréal means blossom, and Prairial means a lot of mongoose have invaded France.
May has some, They're, May is what every month is sort of national something month at the moment. And in the United Kingdom, May is National Pet Month and National Smile Month. Though, aren't there some animals that don't like you smiling directly at them? They take it as a threat. So, you shouldn't bare your teeth to certain creatures. So you've got to be careful which pet you smile at, I guess, in May.
Very true. I think as well that's true of the Finnish, as I understand it.
Never bare your teeth to a Finn. In America, it's National Burger Month, National Older Americans Month, and National Military Appreciation Month.
I call bullshit on both of those, because every month is National Burger and National Military Appreciation Month.
But in May, if you've got an older person in your family who's also a military veteran, you have to give them burgers every day to combine all three of those observances. Also in Hawaii, it's Lei Day. As in a lei that you hang around your neck. Now, Ben, please. Utah celebrates Golden Spike Day on May the 10th. That's apparently to commemorate the opening of the first transcontinental railroad. There was a contractor called David Hughes from San Francisco, and he was disappointed when he heard that nobody had prepared some sort of item to commemorate the opening of the railroad, which was going to be finished on May the 8th, 1869. And he couldn't get anyone to finance it. So he put up $400 of his own gold to be a San Franciscan in the 1800s and had a foundry in San Francisco cast a golden spike, which would be part of the ceremony to help sort of lay the final rivet, I suppose, in the railroad. And May 29th is Put a Pillow in Your Fridge Day.
Oh, I mean, that's just a great little life hack, isn't it?
Yeah, well, apparently it's you sleep better if it's a bit cooler in your room. If it's too hot, it's harder to sleep.
Yeah.
But this dates back to the early 1900s, May 29th. Families apparently would place a piece of cloth or linen inside their larders. Typically something would be torn from your bedroom, either be it a blanket or a nightgown or something like that. And if you put a piece of cloth in the place where food was, sort of the hope was that the plentifulness of your food would lead to sort of fertility in the bedroom as well. So that has sort of morphed into putting a pillow in a fridge these days.
Yeah, I it's in Grimm's fairy tales and myths and traditions, there used to be a real sort of visceral reason for them that has been watered down. This is already quite an asinine tradition that has become even more bland in the past century.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go back to a slightly more exciting one. Bealtaine, or Beltane, as the ancient Celtic May Day festival, about halfway between the spring equinox and the summer solstice. That's the sort of it's the position it holds in the calendar on the 1st of May. Traditionally observed in Ireland and Scotland, the Isle of Man. And it's one of the four seasonal festivals you get in the Gaelic tradition, along with Samhain, Imbolc and Lunasa. And it marks sort of the beginning of the summer when cattle are being driven out to the summer pastures, and you'd have rituals to protect the cattle and the people and the crops and to encourage growth and to ward off the fairies. So you'd have things like bonfires being lit, and sometimes people would extinguish all the fires in their own home and then relight them using flames taken from those bonfires.
They would relight their fires.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, take that was very much a Celtic tradition. And then at the end, obviously, take that would be sacrifice. But they keep coming back. It's so hard.
Are you saying that are immortals that have to be sacrificed every Beltane to appease the old gods?
Yeah, essentially that is what I'm saying.
Good.
I mean, we should revive. That's a tradition we should revive. Forget bringing back imperial measurements.
Yeah.
Take back sacrificing trait. Take that.
Yes, please. I mean, Robbie Williams very much has a fatted calf element to him, doesn't he?
They'd also drive the cattle in and around the bonfire, sometimes leaping over them. And there'd be feasts and drinking and all of that stuff. And decorating the houses and maypoles with flowers. And maypoles are a particularly recognisable symbol of the summer festivals, particularly popular in May Day in the United Kingdom and around midsummer in a lot of the rest of Europe. Big tall pole, you'd have dances around them and they'd be decorated with flowers and so on. Again, as with all of these, the question is, why exactly is this the thing we're doing to mark this?
Don't ask those awkward questions when there's a a ritual going on.
Yeah. Some suggestions are that it's a symbol of the world axis, the axis mundi.
Okay.
The sort of around which the world turns. Obviously, because it's a tall pole, there's the question of if it's phallic symbolism and to do with fertility. Thomas Hobbes.
Everything's a phallic symbol, Barry.
I know. Yeah, Thomas Hobbes thought it dated back to the Roman god Priapus. Obviously, Sigmund Freud gets in the idea as well. There's a reference to one of them in John Clelland's novel, Fanny Hill. And now, disengaged from the shirt, I saw with wonder and surprise, what? Not the plaything of a boy, not the weapon of a man, but a maypole of so enormous a standard that had proportions been observed, it must have belonged to a young giant. So yeah, the person in the novel saw someone with a dick so big, it made them think of a maypole. Presumably it had little Morris dancers swinging from it as well. Obviously, it's also possibly just a practical thing. It's a tall monument for people to see and come and gather from far and wide around, and you can hang things off it. And also it's to do with, you know, plenty. So the fact it looks a bit like a tree, hanging flowers and garlands off it makes sense. They're not really being decorated with, you know, phallic symbols or anything, so the phallus thing might be a bit of a misnomer.
And do we think the dancing round it and interweaving bits of material and rope, that came later? Because that feels like it must be symbolic of a thing.
Well, apparently the custom of the maypole was very pretty well established by the 1300s. The sort of literature shows it appears even further back than that, but by the 1400s, it's really well established across Britain. And spread beyond there. But they were nice, you know, like I say, communal symbol. You have a lot of poor parishes joining up with each other to try and build one and erect one. In some cases, in 1602 in Hertfordshire and in 1639 in Warwickshire, people stole the maypoles from their neighbours' villages because they couldn't afford their own. In other instances, in 1603, the Earl of Huntingdon was pretty annoyed when some of the trees from his estate were removed illegally to make maypoles by the neighbouring villages. There's a church at St Andrew Undershaft in the city of London.
There's a church at where?
Called St Andrew Undershaft. You get a lot of churches in the city of London with weird names, like something under the croft.
Sorry, I'm so sorry, but Sir Andrew Undershaft sounds like a mate of Falstaff's, doesn't he?
St Andrew Undershaft.
All right, yeah, it sounds like one of Falstaff's mates after he's been dead for a century, and the Pope's gone, all right then, fine.
Well, apparently the Undershaft comes from the fact that it had a really enormous maypole set up there every year, it was particularly renowned for being a very tall maypole, but student riots led to it being pulled down as a pagan idol in the 1500s. And Protestantism looked pretty askance at maypoles in generally, and they were viewed as idolatry and stamped out. Mary the First, when she was reinstated, she was a Catholic, so she sort of didn't object to maypoles so much. But again, it was a bit sporadic. It was driven out in Scotland by the Presbyterians and so on. Maypoles may have had a particularly anti-establishment aesthetic during the reign of Cromwell, because Parliament and the puritanical views of Cromwell's Parliament led to a lot of fun things being banned. So obviously the maypole was one of those things that suffered. And so this big tall stick with flowers on it became a symbol of the resistance. and it was restored in 1660 when Charles II came to the throne. Apparently, maypoles were put up at every crossway in London, according to a guy called John Aubrey, to celebrate.
Right, so very much like poppies nowadays.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The tallest maypole in that instance was over 130 feet tall and was blown over by a high wind in 1672.
Great.
It was moved to Wanstead in Essex after that. It had been in London near the Strand. It was moved to Essex and it served as a mount for the telescope of Sir Isaac Newton.
Wow.
Some May traditions. On the 1st of May, it's traditional to wash your face in the dew on the grass. Because apparently it was believed that May dew would clear imperfections and wash away pimples and freckles. So forget your Clearasil. Get yourself some May dew.
There's another May tradition in Oxford, which is for students either of Magdalen College or who have just been up all night drinking and have got poor judgment to jump off Magdalen Bridge into either the Cherwell or whatever the name of the other river is in Oxford, whose name I've forgotten. Yeah, and inevitably it leads to injuries. And
yeah, it's a really tall bridge, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's an incredibly reckless tradition.
Finest brains in the country.
Yes.
Spattered all over the rocks below. Also in May, it was considered superstitious to get married. There's a saying that goes, marry in May and you'll rue the day.
So you shouldn't get married in May?
Shouldn't get married in May. June is the one people would suggest you should get married in. So May was the one you shouldn't get married in.
How delighted I am that my wedding anniversary is tomorrow, May the 31st. Almost got away with it.
Yeah. May also, you shouldn't, according to superstition in Cornwall, acquire a new broom. And you shouldn't wash any blankets.
Oh, my God. And obviously, after my wedding...
Well, that was all right, because it was the 1st of June. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, no, that was... No, but we did have 17 different brooms on our on our gift list.
The John Lewis broom collection.
Yes.
Also, no US president has ever died in the month of May.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
To Washington.
Yeah, there's a US president, at least one US president has died in every month of the year apart from the month of May.
God, that is such a red rag to anyone. It really is. I mean, to be fair, I feel like Biden would be quite an easy president to assassinate. You just have to creep up behind him and shout boo.
I also read about the distress call, May Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you know the reason May Day is the distress call.
It's from French, right? May Day, aid me, please.
Yeah, so it was conceived in the early 1920s by a chap called Frederick Stanley Mockford, who was the officer in charge of radio at Croydon Airport in England. And he'd been asked to come up with a word that could indicate distress and could be understood by everybody in the case of an emergency. And SOS wasn't a particularly useful cry because it's quite... it's the sibilants are quite hard to make out over radio. And a lot of the air traffic at the time, in the early days of flying, were between Croydon Airport and Le Bourget Airport in Paris. They were the two of the busier airports. So he proposed the term Mayday because, as I said, it's the French Mayday means help me or come help me. And Mayday is also a word in English to celebrate the holiday. So he thought it's an English word, but that also works in French. And so they introduced it in February 1923. And in 1927, the International Radio Telegraph Convention of Washington adopted it as the radio telephone distress call in addition to the SOS Morse code signal. But there's also another French term that gets used in distress calls, which is pan-pan. Do you know why they would use pan-pan?
I mean, my immediate gut reaction is that is a... piece of rare fauna donated to Paris Zoo by China. But I think if you ever want a bear to rescue you from a situation, it's never going to be a panda, is it?
No, yeah.
Although, is that do they have that in China? I don't imagine they have St. Bernard's there. If you get stuck up a Chinese mountain range, you're just expecting a panda with a small barrel of rice wine around its neck to come staggering up the peaks.
Yes. It would just fall asleep halfway up. That's the problem.
Well, yes, that is the issue.
We'll establish base camp here overnight. Let's put up the tents. I know we've eaten all of the eucalyptus and bamboo. Yeah, no, pan comes from the French pané, means to break, or pan is a breakdown.
Okay.
So pan is used as a distress call when there's an urgent situation, but it's not of the grave and imminent threat level, which might require immediate assistance. So there's a mechanical failure or a medical problem, but they're not at full emergency level yet.
Okay, so it's the equivalent of dialing 111.
Yes, yeah. Like, you don't go straight to the emergency services. It's just like, everything isn't fine, but we might be okay. But just be prepared for the finest situation to possibly change.
So it's that meme with the dog, but there's just a tiny little fire in the corner.
Yeah, it's that meme, but the sirens for the emergency services are sort of vaguely in the distance.
Yes.
Sometimes people would then use the phrase declaring an emergency in aviation. The International Civil Aviation Organization recommends using pan-pan and then Mayday as the two sort of levels of escalation rather than declaring an emergency. Because if you use other phrases rather than these two that are widely recognized, it can cause confusion and so on.
I'll be honest, like, Pan Pan sounds more desperate than Mayday. Mayday's got a very relaxed sound to it, but Pan Pan, Pan Pan, Pan Pan!
Yes. And one other May tradition that I read about, 29th of May, is known as Pinch Bum Day.
I'm listening.
In the rest of Britain, it's called Oak Apple Day. And do you know what an oak apple is?
I don't know.
It's an acorn. It's another term for the acorn.
Oh, great. Lovely.
Yeah. So what is the famous oak tree story in British history, Ben?
So,
we've mentioned Charles II.
Yes. So in 1662, Charles II was running away from King Arthur and all of the other knights that sold the Magna Carta. And he was looking for somewhere to hide. And he met Churchill at the crossroads, who told him that if he hid in that oak tree over there, then he and Boadicea would protect him from the oncoming armies. No?
That sounds roughly right. Yeah, Uncle Ben sits you all down and teaches you his version of English history. not too far out with the year, actually. 1651, Charles II was being pursued. The future Charles II, the son of Charles I, the king who had been beheaded by the Roundheads. Charles was fleeing the parliamentary forces across England, trying to evade capture. And Cromwell had a £1,000 bounty on the 21-year-old king-in-waiting's head. And his troops were in hot pursuit of him. And Charles got to Boscobel House in Shropshire, the home of the brothers William and Richard Pendrell, who were supporters of the royal family. And the parliamentarian troops got wind of the fact that Charles was hiding there, and so they arrived, and Charles had to escape somewhere. And he spent the day hiding in an oak tree in the grounds of the house. Apparently the tree had been sort of trimmed a while ago, so the growth was quite full and fresh. You know, when you trim something back and it grows back fuller. So it was the perfect place to hide as far as he was concerned. And he hid up there with Colonel William Carlos, who was his attendant. The two of them hid up in the branches. The one problem was Charles was absolutely exhausted from being on the run and kept falling asleep. And Colonel William Carlos had to regularly pinch the future king to keep him awake. And apparently, whether this is to do with where they were sat in the tree branches or it was a particular predilection of Colonel Carlos, he decided to keep pinching the king on the bum to keep him awake. And Charles escaped, and the monarchy was restored in 1660, and 29th of May, which was Charles II's birthday, was declared a public holiday to be kept forever as a day of thanksgiving, and people would attend church to give thanks to the royal survival. Members of Parliament, wearing a sprig of oak, attended St. Margaret's Church in Westminster, and the Book of Common Prayer even included some words of a special service. So across the country, people would mimic that, wearing sprigs of oak in their hat or the lapel to celebrate 29th of May, or Oak Apple Day, or Pinch Bum Day, because if anybody didn't wear the leaves of an oak, they could be pinched on the bottom by passers-by to chastise them.
Sure, okay. Like, I see the logic. It feels like we're all going quite a long distance to maintain that tradition. What I've also learned is that British history was one very loud squirrel away from not getting the restoration of the king.
Yes.
Just one little loyalist Republican squirrel going, "Oi, Oliver, over here."
The other alternative is that if Colonel Carlos hadn't been up there and the king just stayed asleep up there, then Sir Isaac Newton might have discovered a king falling out of a tree. The alternative to pinching people on their bums apparently was slapping them with stinging nettles. And this was recorded particularly in Sussex, up to the 1940s. People would still hang sprigs of oak on their front door, or their houses might be pelted with eggs if they didn't do so. The day also was known as Shikshak Day. Shikshak is another old name for an oak tree, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And children would chant a song. Shikshak, penny a rag, bang his head in Cromwell's bag. Badness to this house will stay before the next 29th of May. Basically, it was a kind of a trick-or-treat thing. Kids would chant outside the houses of people who didn't have their oak sprigs up, demanding rewards or payments to stop them egging their houses. So yeah, a lovely old English tradition that encourages sexual assault and vigilante violence. What better way to see out the month of May? So that's it. That's all we've got for you this month on the Third Foot. Thank you as ever to our donors on Patreon for their donations, which keep the lights on here and through whose beneficence we do these extra episodes. And join us next week, next Monday, for a regular Worst Foot Forward episode. It's bound to be another bumper one. I think it's about weddings. Is it that one?
I don't know. It's weddings. You're steering.
Yes, it is. It's going to be, appropriately enough, Ben, you mentioned your wedding anniversary is in May as well. It's going to be about the world's worst wedding.
Oh, beautiful. Well, there will never be a mention of mine, because mine is absolutely in the top five.
Yeah. Thanks for listening for Worst Foot Forward. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.